Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. I have got two very special guests, but I just want to tell you a little bit about my show. My show has been airing since 2011. On my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, is every guest I've ever interviewed, including those in the pandemic. And you can have some on-camera interviews, lots of podcasts. And if you want to pitch me an idea for a guest, or you yourself would like to be a guest, all you have to do is send me an email to janine@kuci.org. Okay, so standing by to kick off the show is David Robleski, and he's out with his new book, Familiaris, and he is the author of the internationally best-selling novel, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, an Oprah Book Club pick, Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writer Selection, and winner of the Colorado Book Award, Indie Choice Best Author Discovery Award, and the Midwest Bestseller Association's Choice Award. Wow. Incredible accolades. The Story of Edgar Sawtelle has been translated into over 25 languages, and David lives in Colorado. He is here to talk about this brand new book right now. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Congratulations on your book.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so happy it's out there.
I was just going to ask, how does it feel to have it out there?
It feels great. It's a relief. It's been a long writing process and a long publishing process. So I had a blast working on it, but I also am very happy to have kicked it out the door and have it out in the world.
I don't know why you say it's a long writing process. It's only close to 980 pages.
it's a small thing. Yeah. I admit it wasn't intended to be that long, but it turned out that way.
I was going to ask you, how did you know when you were done? I know that's kind of jumping ahead, but how did you know?
That's a really interesting question, because the fact is you're never done.
Yeah.
You run out of time and resources, mm-hmm. and you reach a point where you have the sense that for every change that you're putting in, you're really just creating churn, and mm-hmm. you're not actually improving things.
Yeah.
And that's a very intuitive thing, but for particularly when I was working on my first novel, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, that was a very confusing thing for me, because what I expected was I would reach a point where I would say, I know it's as good as I can possibly make it. Mm-hmm. There's no way it could be any better. There's no change I would make that wouldn't be worth exploring. And that's not how it works.
Yeah. So it's been 16 years since your first book came out. How did this new story come about?
This story arose from a minor character in the story of Edgar Sawtelle, who was there, I thought, purely to sort of provide a sort of background for how the Sawtelle family came to live where they lived on the farm that they lived on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a little four-page sort of potted history of the Sawtelles and their grandfather, whose name was John Sawtelle.
Okay.
And I thought that was the end of it. But as I went forward on the story, I kept wanting to put in more and more anecdotes about John and the way he lived, because virtually the first thing I wrote about him was that he was, the phrase was, he was born with an extra share of whimsy.
And it's
funny how just language can inspire you.
Yes.
And that phrase, I kept coming back to it and saying, what does that mean? What would that mean? What would a person like that be? And it happened over and over again while I was working on Edgar's story. And so when I was done, I had to force myself to stop indulging in backstory about John.
And, yeah.
But when I was done, I had sort of promised myself that if he still seemed interesting, he would get his own book. And so that's where I began this book. Was I had this four-page it's the first four pages of the first chapter of Edgar. Mm-hmm. And I had that four-page sort of summary of his life. And I set out to say, okay, what's behind those four pages?
Yes. It's so interesting as a writer how, I mean, did you kind of see this visually in your mind, almost like a movie?
Let me think about that. I do operate in a very visual manner, but not so much as a movie, mm-hmm. as in almost like individual snapshots from a movie. If you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I do.
Like when I began both of these books, I had just images in my head. Like, I don't know how this comes about happening, but there's this. There's a moment that looks like this, or there's a moment that looks like this, and then there's just a sort of gray fog around those things, mm-hmm. that I know that they will be connected somehow, and that's part of the fun of the writing.
Yes.
But I don't know how, and I don't really know necessarily what the meaning of that moment that is like a picture for me. I don't entirely know what that means generally.
So in your process, do you typically, you'll put things down on paper and then it's kind of like a sculpture, like you go back and you kind of redo this area or you add on to that area?
My process is the least clever process that you could possibly imagine. And I recommend it to absolutely no one. It's just extravagantly wasteful.
Okay, let's hear it.
I write and overwrite, vastly overwrite every scene as I'm going forward.
Wow.
Until I understand where everyone is standing, mm-hmm. where the light is coming from, how everybody looks, where everything is. Way too much information, more than anyone would want to know.
Okay.
And then I essentially throw that away and then write the scene. Now that I know everything there is to know about it, now I can write it, because now I know what is the whose viewpoint is the interesting one in that situation. Mm-hmm. What perspective is interesting, like if the reader is going to be positioned in a certain angle to see things, mm-hmm. What aspects of it to emphasize and what aspects turn out not to be interesting and so on. But I've never found a shortcut to that that works for me.
It's so interesting. It reminds me of, I studied screenwriting here at UCI, of doing a character analysis before you write anything. So you break down, you know, who everyone is, their backstory, everything. It kind of reminds me of that, but a lot more detail.
Well, that it's interesting that you bring up character backstory, because that's the one thing that I don't do. When I'm thinking about a scene, and I try and write most of the book in scene, mm-hmm. When I'm thinking about a scene, I'm really just thinking about what is the physical environment. I want to be able to visualize it. I'm not too worried about character backstories, unless there's a very particular reason to know that. Mm-hmm. But before I started writing in earnest, I always imagined that writers would basically come up with biographies of every character, you know, beforehand, and they would have that, and that's sort of in their arsenal of information. And that's not at all the way it works for me. The way it works for me is the characters come on and they behave in certain ways. Mm. And once they start behaving, then I can say to myself, well, what kind of a person would behave like that?
I see.
And so their backstory comes along after they're already on stage doing stuff.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it was a big surprise to me that it worked that way, because it doesn't make sense. But then most of novel writing, in my experience, works backwards from the way that common sense would tell you it should work.
Sure. So could you tell me when you first knew you wanted to become a writer? Was it early on?
But all growing up, I thought I was going to be an actor. I grew up in deep rural central Wisconsin. We didn't have much exposure to the arts. Just television, really, was my only exposure to any creative outlet. And so I think I had a sense that I wanted to, you know, I had a creative impulse, but I didn't know what channel it would really take. So I thought I was going to be, an actor, because that's what was available to me. I was a theater major for, I think, one full semester, but in fact, probably more like half a semester before I realized this is not what I'm good at. But I was very, very interested in the screenplays themselves or the play scripts themselves. It was fascinating to read them, and all my imaginative sympathy went into imagining the writer of the play script.
That's great.
And so that was, I think, my first clue that I was interested in it. But I ended up getting a degree in computer science, a fabulously creative endeavor. It does not have that reputation.
No.
But it is designing with language. It's making machines out of language.
Sure.
And so I learned an enormous amount of craft knowledge, just sort of in your fingers, craft knowledge about how to work with language. It's just that they were artificial languages.
Interesting.
But I learned how much work it takes, how often you revise things, how you start with something that's crude and simple, and you make it more and more complex, and you learn how to hold its operation in your mind all at once and visualize it, and imagine, well, if I changed it this way, then it would work differently, and so on. And all those, there's no name for that skill, but it's absolutely essential in writing.
So interesting.
To sort of hold the story in your mind and go, well, that's not quite right. I ought to change this, but if I change this, that means this has to change, and that has to change, and the things before it really should be different, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a point after I'd been working over 20 years in the software industry and doing research and having a blast, that I for whatever reason, I thought, oh, it might be fun to try writing a novel. I mean, how hard could that be?
Sure.
And immediately crashed and burned. But I'd gotten interested.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up ultimately, it took many years, but I ultimately got an MFA in creative writing through Warren Wilson, a really well-known creative writing program.
That's great.
Managed to study with fabulous teachers there who could answer some of the really basic dumb questions I had about, like, why novels work the way they work.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And so in this current book, how much of yourself, because I know it's set in Wisconsin, how much of yourself or your backstory is integrated?
The most immediate thing that I think I know I've taken from my life is that the farm where this story is mainly takes place, and where all of Edgar takes place, is the farm that I grew up on, with all my family evacuated and all new people brought in, pretty much like players on a stage to play out a different story. Excuse me.
Wait, grab some water. Completely fine. Grab some water. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with David Robleski about his new book, Familiaris. And it's a follow-up to his other book, which was a New York Times best-selling book called The Story of Edgar Sawtelle. And I'm about to ask him how he landed on Oprah's book club. Wow, David. So whenever you're ready.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know how they choose. That's a closely held secret, as far as I can tell.
I was hoping you'd spill that.
Yeah, boy, if I knew, I wouldn't tell you anyway. But if
Thanks.
I knew, I would. I would certainly work that process. But I have no idea. I think I know as much as anybody else, which is that it comes purely out of Oprah's enthusiasm for books, and I'm sure that they look at many books and beside, but it seems based purely in readerly enthusiasm, which I I appreciate very much.
That's fantastic. When did you get the news?
Oh, God, when did we find out? I guess it was maybe a couple of months before the publication date, because the publisher obviously needs to know this stuff. Sure. Because it ends up being printed with the emblem on the cover and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, but not terribly long ahead of time.
Okay, but what great news! Wow,
David. Oh yes, whew. Yes, and a great honor. I mean, to be in her book club twice is
fantastic.
I have great admiration for what she's done as an advocate for reading, and so I'm absolutely honored to be a part of it.
That's amazing. So do you want to share a little bit about how this book unfolded? Because you spent, you know, many years crafting this, and, you know, just kind of the structure. I love the titles, you know, of the different chapters, and just maybe a little bit about your process.
Sure. I begin... I'll try and make this relatively quick, and we can dive in however you'd like after mm-hmm. that. I begin with a very generalized idea of the overall arc of the story. I don't make a detailed outline. I'm not one of those writers who, before they begin writing, knows everything that's going to happen. To me, that's just would be deathly boring. I want to discover mm-hmm. as I go along.
Sure.
But I do have a general idea of the basic structure, and in this case, I knew that I wanted to tell a life story. I wanted it to be something like a fictional biography, but not using the sort of simple chronological tools of biography, but instead looking at. Well, it took me a couple of years to get to this point, but I finally understood that what I really wanted to do is look at these five moments in John's life, which I called the great quests of his life, those moments when you think that you're solving a simple problem, or you're just off on an errand, or there's some smaller thing going on that, in retrospect, turns out to be a turning point in your life.
Yeah.
And so I decided that there were five in John's life. And so the book has six parts. Five of the six parts are sort of stories in and of themselves that tell about that great quest in his life.
No, I love that. That's a really interesting process. Wow.
It helped me tremendously. Once I did not... immediately understand that was the structure of the book, and for mm-hmm. a couple of years I was sort of in a big fight with this book because I had imagined it being very small, half the length of the story of Edgar Sawtelle, and so I spent a couple of years arguing and saying you're going to be small, and it kept saying I can't be small, and I finally understood why it couldn't be small and why it had. Once I understood that it was going to parse out into these five or six sections, then I understood why it wanted to take up the amount of space that it wanted to take up. No single part in this book is all that long. It's just that there's six of them.
Right. And now, what role do dogs play in your life? Do you have a lot of dogs? I mean, this was a big part of the book.
Yes, the dogs are central to the story of Edgar Sawtelle. The story of Edgar Sawtelle is a very tightly knit story. It's kind of a pressure cooker of a story. I wanted Familiaris to look outward and be way more expansive, way more freewheeling, and I wanted it to have the latitude to sort of look at the relationship. In using the tools of fiction, look at the sort of relationship that we have with dogs as species, because we've been living with dogs for on the order of 800 human generations, or 3,000 canine generations, And it's changed us. It's changed both species, I believe. We have co-evolved.
Yeah.
So I wanted the sort of latitude to look at that. And my own personal history is that on the farm where I grew up, my folks raised dogs. Not for all of my childhood, but for about 5 or 6 years, my folks raised dogs. It was my mother's dream to do that. But we were very poor, and there came a time when they said, we can't pay the bills and do this right, and we're not willing to do this wrong. And so they stopped, which was a terrible day for me because my chores as a kid was to socialize the pups, which are the best chores you could possibly imagine having.
Yes.
So I mean, my first memories of a dog, I all through my childhood, I've had dogs. Most of my adult life, I've had dogs. That doesn't make me very different from anyone else, really, I don't think. What's different is that I find them fascinating to write about. And I try to use as much sort of what we actually know about dogs and canine evolution as possible, and their psychology and the way they work. And not just turn them into, like, talking, you know, people talking with a dog suit on. I want them to be as genuinely dog-like as possible.
I love that. So where can people find out more about you and the book? And do you have a book tour going on?
I do have a book tour going on. It's, I think most of that information is available at the Blackstone Publishing website.
Okay.
I have a website, davidrobleski.com. So the basic information is there. I'm not very present on social media, so I think really doing a web search is the best way to find out about it. There's a fair amount of material out there now. Oprah has posted interviews and various other information about the book, so that is probably the best way to find out.
Okay, and I put all of your information on my show blog, which was getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I have links to you, Oprah's book club, all the information. Your book came out June 11th. It's available in hardcover, ebook, and audiobook. Did you do the audiobook yourself?
No. Richard Poe narrates the audiobook. He did the audiobook for Edgar too. And he's absolutely fabulous, which I would say, even if it wasn't my book, he's one of the best audiobook narrators of all time.
I'm
just thrilled that he did it.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. So do you feel like you need a breather now that you got this out in the world?
Yeah, I was tapped out when this book was done by design. I really didn't want to put this book into the world and say, well, if only I had worked harder on it, So I really sort of timed things so I had nothing left at the very end. So I took the summer off. Labor Day's coming up pretty soon here, and I find myself chomping at the bit to start playing with words again.
I'm not surprised. Well, yeah. I want to congratulate you. What a huge accomplishment. I do want to mention that on the front cover of your book, you have a wonderful endorsement by somebody that people would definitely know, Tom Hanks. Let's see, he says that you have set a storytelling bonfire. Familiaris is an expansive and enlightening saga that has ever been written. Whoa.
Yeah, that was a very generous blurb on his part. And in return, I would say, you know, he's the author of two books, a novel and a collection of short stories, both of which I really enjoyed. So I just return the favor and say he's no slouch himself.
And
he's doing okay as an actor too.
He's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. He's getting by. He's an up and comer, I think.
I know. Sure. Well, David, I want to thank you so much. Congratulations on your book, Familiaris. And again, for the listeners, you can find all the links to David on my show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Congratulations. Thanks again for calling in.
Thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Be well. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
If you missed any part of my conversation with David, it'll be up within an hour after I wrap as a podcast on the show blog. And you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. You can find out more about us, our music shows, public affairs shows, by visiting www.kuci.org. You can also check out our socials at KUCI FM. And I'm here every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. If you want to find out about being a guest, you can send me an email to Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at KUCI.org. And again, the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. We'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.